I was thinking about that idea of the bees experimenting on us or controlling us in relation to the mosquito or something, and it seems like it's not really working too well.
Their control of us, you mean?
I mean, it really depends on what their aim is, but
it's hard to imagine what their goal is. We would like to probably imagine that they want this beautiful earth with all these flowers to pollinate, and that's what we would envision for them. But maybe they want us to destroy the earth.
If the experimentation is successful, is going their way, that seems more.
Oh, with this colony collapse and this idea that they're going to another place, they have a better place to go to, they've discovered their nirvana, then perhaps they just want us to all self-destruct here.
That just reminded me that I wanted to ask Adam Zaretsky if he has colony collapse disorder, if you're disordered with colony collapse.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty flagrantly borderline sometimes, but I was studying for a while Lynn Margulis's theories on endosymbiosis, which is that there are organisms that live inside of organisms but aren't parasites, but that work with them. Sometimes they just eat at the same table, like commensalism, but sometimes they're symbiotic and they interact in a relational way that's positive for both sides. But I got a little paranoid, maybe like Ryder is talking about, that I think that our neurons are made of ancient spirochetes. So, like the nerves that make up our brain and our spine, you can sort of see when we were a single-celled animal, something like a sperm tail grabbed onto our butts and crawled up and made a hole there and crisscrossed and made this nervous system that leads up to our brain, where they formed a hive, and the hive has eyes, and that's our brain, and it's peeking out of what was just a sort of like a dumb somatic, easygoing, laid-back bubble person. And now there's this drive to eat, more than eat, but to cognate and to look and to build heavy machinery and to like bulldoze stuff. And I gather that those spirochetes hate oxygen, can only live in our butts, in our spinal fluids, in our brains. They can't live outside. The brain wants to go back outside, but there's all this oxygen here made by, like, phytoplankton and chlorophyll and the plants. They really pissed off a lot of bacteria. They really set them back. They had to crawl under stones. They had to live in our shit and murky swamps down in the depths because they can't come outside, because actually the atmosphere is not good for them. So the destruction of the earth is not the destruction of life. The destruction of the ecosphere as we know it, if we bulldoze everything, unless the entire atmosphere is gone, and even if it is, there are bacteria living 12 miles down in the rocks that will start producing ammonia again, and they'll be like, this is much more breathable. I don't think we can kill the life force of the planet, much less the universe. I think it's really strong. But we can kill ourselves and everyone we know. Vzz. And we can set ourselves on vibrate and vibrate ourselves out. But, like, I don't know. I don't know if it's not just a plan of non-humans to get us to change the atmosphere for them through, like, fossil fuel overuse, which is actually the worship of dinosaurs, right? Like, we're taking dinosaur-ish and dinosaur bones and pulling it out of the earth and burning it. And we're maybe built to set ourselves back in time before humans, into a time before plants even, when bacteria roamed the earth and had a great time without oxygen. Maybe we were built by them to do this sort of, instead of leaving to another planet, maybe Utopia is like an all ammonia atmosphere here for bacteria to be like out and free and partying, and our brains will like leave our bodies and go live outside without us.
wasting all my time. Cause when you're standing oh so near, I kinda lose my mind, yeah. It's not the perfume that you wear, it's not the ribbons in your hair. I don't mind you coming here and wasting all my time. Ooh. Ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh. 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 It doesn't matter where you've been, as long as it was deep, yeah. Always new to wear it well, and it looks so fancy, I can tell. And I don't mind you hanging out in your sleep. I guess you're just what I needed.
Just what I needed.
I needed someone to feed.
Someone to feed.
I guess you're just what I needed.
Just what I needed.
I needed someone to bleed. Wasting all my time. Cause when you're standing oh so near, I kinda lose my mind, yeah. It's not the perfume that you wear, it's not the ribbons in your hair. I don't mind you coming here, wasting all my time. I guess you're just what I needed.
Just what I needed.
I needed someone to feed.
Someone to feed.
I guess you're just what I needed.
Just what I needed.
I needed someone to bleed. I guess you're just what I needed.
Just what I need.
I needed someone to feed.
Someone to feed.
I guess you're just what I needed.
Just what I needed.
I needed someone to bleed. Just what I needed. Yeah, just what I needed.
This is Here I Ears featuring of Colony Collapse Disorder Radio, a 7-show series that's exploring in a very free form way cross-genre way the perpetual buzz between human and bee creatures. And today's show, the sixth show, is called Supersedure, and it's an extra long show that's going to extend into the beginning of The Swarm. And you just heard Toshi Regan and Chocolate Genius doing a Cars cover, Just What I Needed. And before that, you were listening to some of an interview with Adam Zaretsky, Vivo artist, affiliated with the university, RPI, from where we're broadcasting. And we have a little bit more of that interview coming up. We're going to start swarming today, but part of what we wanted to announce today at this, the planned conclusion of Colony Collapse Disorder radio series, is the intention to swarm through next semester. So we're going to be taking a hiatus through the summer for the most part, and then returning for some more extensive focus on the swarming in the fall when classes resume here.
E.E., do you know if bees, when they swarm, if they ever return to the hive that they left?
I don't. I imagine that that's happened. Although the reason they leave is because there's an issue with, if they are swarming in the natural way that swarm happens, they're leaving because it's too crowded, and yeah, they're doing this kind of natural reproduction, division. Mm-hmm. And so that they would be looking for a new space, and not all of them leave. Mm-hmm. The old queen leaves with most of the young bees. But I think it certainly has happened that the beekeeper will catch the swarm.
That's true.
And bring it back and improve conditions, rearrange the hive so that there is enough space for all the bees. That's mm-hmm. definitely something that happens.
Right. So as both the beekeeper and the bee, you'll be swarming out of the radio station with me today, and then you'll be bringing yourself back in the fall into the radio station hive.
Yeah, I guess we're just not really ready to leave. We have to explore some more possible locations.
We have to catch our own swarm.
Yeah. So we're going to return to some dialogue, conversational, sonic expressions with Adam Zaretsky, and then we'll come back again. Thanks for listening.
I want to talk to you guys about rewilding. I want to hear what you think. There's that guy, Dave Foreman from Earth First, and after 9/11, I think someone from George Bush's camp called up Dave Foreman and said, you have to say that you have disbanded Earth First. Now, Earth First still exists, but Dave Foreman is not a part of it officially anymore because he was threatened with being labeled a terrorist group because of putting the nails in trees and stopping logging and things like this, monkey wrenching.
Is he one of the pivotal members of Earth First?
Yeah, he helped start it. And so he disavowed his Earth First relationship. And then he started something called the Wildlands Project. I think it's TWP.org. And the idea is that we need large mammals, and we need predator large mammals like bear and wild cats and wolves in order to have a real ecosystem. The problem with large mammals is that they actually need large areas. And although we have these parks, sometimes the population of large mammals gets large enough that they need to migrate. And they have no place to migrate to. They're stuck in a park that's a jail. It has a border. And on the edge of the border is either a freeway, a mall, or a golf course. And every time they go to any of those three places, they get shot. Right? For being on the golf course and doing something like what a wolf or a wildcat would do on a golf course. So his plan is to create eco corridors between parks so that actually all parks are eventually networked and connected, so that everything, every non-human from armadillo to, you know, fox to aardvark to lynx can migrate to different places to have more space. And actually, one of the political things he's doing, which relates to what you're talking about, is he's trying to get parks connected by corridors across borders. He eventually wants a corridor all around the world, but he's starting, one of his major projects is from Panama to the Yukon. And certainly on the U.S. and Mexican border, and certainly on the U.S. and Canadian border, there are some political problems with the idea of there being a pathway for non-humans to cross the border without national sovereignty being respected by these non-humans, you know. And at the same time, I think it's a beautiful project, and I'm kind of interested in these wildlife corridors being a sort of way of talking about internationalism. So I wonder what you guys think about that.
Well, it just makes me think about the so-called Africanized bees and thinking about movement of different animal creatures. And I think that if animals relocate themselves, then we won't be up against, there won't be so many complications. For instance, the killer bee probably never would have wanted to come here in the first place. It would have gone somewhere else if it needed to go somewhere. It would have gone somewhere to a climate that it could live in. So it seems lovely that the animals would be able to do that.
I'm a little bit confused about, because I think that there are a lot of human misconceptions about what's natural or is related to our nostalgia for a simpler, purer, more real kind of organization of living creatures that was based on their natural habitat, you know, that wasn't so choreographed by humans and human needs and greed or reckless destruction. So I'm curious about the basic. I like the vision. I like coming up with a way to start to pick away at or destroy pieces of national borders. I think that's the most exciting part about it. I don't totally understand the basis of his argument, why, just asking that kind of stupid question maybe about why is it important to have the predators? Why is it important to have the large mammals? Is he addressing specific problems that need to be fixed, or is it just assumed that having more and all of the animals that were once here, and does he distinguish between native and non-native? Like, what's the philosophical basis and what's being addressed exactly? It's not xenophobia and the problem of nation states. It's something else, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's talking actually about eco-balance. It's not something often thought of, but, I mean, things like deer overpopulation or raccoon overpopulation, a lot of these organisms are overpopulating because they don't have any natural predators except for humans. Humans have managed to kill everything that's larger than themselves that they can, especially anything that has any minor threat, right? So all mammals that seem like they might be associated with being larger than us or similar size or have larger teeth or seem to be competing in viciousness to us, we've managed to control, kill, isolate, and fairly well annihilate, to the point where we're starting to try to protect them again as endangered species. But he's actually just talking about a natural ecosystem that involves other predators than us, and that this is a way towards a sound ecosystem. At the same time, yes, you're probably right. He's heroizing some of the non-humans that are pretty cool, you know. Eagles and lynx and wolves are in all of our myths, and they may not exist as beings on the earth after a while. They'll just be myths.
I also think that there are examples in the past of humans trying to create balance. You know, maybe the parks that are islands and jails too, that experiments with that, or these mapped out plans that go awry. So it's hard to imagine. And it's interesting too. I mean, where I live and keep bees, there's the bears are coming back. So I'm affected by that. And in areas not that far from here, the population of coyotes have gotten so big that people can't have their precious cats and pets out, you know, after dark or on a rainy day.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about stewardship and the impossibility of being stewards of the earth because we can't predict the future and because we have sometimes just the weirdest, heaviest hands. We even when they're caring hands, they seem to be like crushing hands. Maybe we don't know how to be good mothers. You know, it's possible that we're overbearing even when we care. But the idea of giving back 2/3 of the earth to non-humans and isolating ourselves in cities might be a way of sort of admitting that if we think we're so damn queer, we should leave the rest of the world out of it. Like in the transgenic project, as far as I can see, it's sort of need to take over not just stewardship of the earth, which is suspect, but also evolution itself, the force of evolution. I'm sort of like, okay, we can do that. Like, but we're weird and we have a strange track record, and maybe we should like keep that contained because we're going to not just force evolve foreign species that never would have existed before, that shouldn't be released into the ecosphere, that will create imbalance, like 2/3 of our food right now, but also that we're going to start engineering ourselves, and we too will be in need of containment. So if we were nice enough or thoughtful enough or even some kind of sci-fi enough to give back 2/3 of the world to not be managed, but just to be a border for humans not to pass and post-humans and their transgenic friends to be kept inside of sort of like a giant laboratory for humans and transgenic others, transgenic humans, because we're going to be very strange in 100 or 200 years. I mean, I'm all for it. I'm sort of like, we should be plaid and queer and covered with like clitoris and rolling around a lot, but maybe we shouldn't be outside.
We need to quarantine ourselves. That's the best idea I've heard in a while.
Do you think there should be special park jails for humans?
Yes. Why make all these corridors for these animals? Maybe we just have to put ourselves, we just have to make the corridor. We've already done it. The work is already there. We just have to quarantine ourselves, as you suggested, into the urban centers.
Well, if this plan were to go forward and it was successful in bringing back a lot of predators, including having a lot more bear and other creatures, then it might prove to be really appropriate that Africanized bees, or that the behaviors that come from bees that originated in Tanzania, would be here so that their defenses could be effectively used against other kinds of large predators besides humans. I don't know, what kind of habitat would you design for the quarantine? You really want to go be quarantined with other humans?
No, but it seems like the only thing left to do.
We can still go camping. We just put on like spacesuits and go out into the nature with like a spacesuit on so we wouldn't contaminate the world. And we could light a fire and have a little pup tent and enjoy the nature through our plastic screen. It's not unlike what we're doing right now anyhow. It's just a little bit more, you know, formal.
A great idea. I feel like in this moment, I can have some hope for the future quarantine plan.
It definitely feels like a break from that more better stewardship kind of model that was just previously mentioned.
Yeah,
if we just find the right humans with the right plan, we can fix all of this.
I feel that, Adam Zaretsky, that this idea of the human just being the bad mother, no matter how hard we try, is perhaps accurate. And the quarantine is the way to go. The stewardship is not It's just, we're just lying to ourselves.
Brought to you by Adam Zaretsky. I wanted to thank Adam Zaretsky for the fine conversation. And if you're interested in hearing more from him and us in dialogue, you can go to colonycollapsedisorder.wordpress.com for the conversation in its entirety. You're listening to Colony Collapse Disorder Radio, the Super Seizure Show, which will begin to swarm at noon and continue on for a bit. And we want to thank callers for letting us know how they're feeling about the show and giving us some feedback. We really, really appreciate it. We appreciate your ideas, especially and even when you are in disagreement or you want to add something. We're really into expanding the conversation and sometimes taking it into unexpected places. And what else did I want to say? That was Grace Jones' Warm Leatherette. And we concluded that portion of our conversation with Adam Zaretsky, and we're going to continue on with some more Super Seizure stuff. Thanks for listening and for talking to us.
Jet black hair, tangled stare, blood inside, silent stare, naked heart, red light night. Stairs in the midnight rain, and naked stairs in the midnight.
You're listening to Colony Collapse Radio. Next, we have an interview that we're going to read a little bit from between Sigrid Dahl and Agnetha Dick, who is an artist who works with bees.
Whose work you can see on a link from our blog. At the Winnipeg Art Gallery, the viewer walks through the library and then into the extended wedding party. In the corner, at the apex of the triangular gallery space, the dress sits in a plexiglass case, which also houses the beehive. It's almost as though the library functions as an entryway to the bride and her entourage. For me, that dress, or the bride, is the queen bee, and it's almost as though all the knowledge suggested by the library is contained in her body, in the genetic codes that determine the bee's social behavior, so that she and the collective of bees become the culmination of synthesis of everything that ever was or will ever be. That was Sigrid.
Agnetha says, well, the bees have an instinct, a knowledge, or whatever that is, and they do know everything about life. They give life, they take life.
Could you talk about what the queen bee means for you subjectively?
I'll start with what writer Sandra Birdsell said. She and a few other people found the work very macabre. I thought about that a lot because the biggest shock for me, it really shows how naive I was about the whole idea of bees, was that this beehive was a friendly place. We work together for each other, one for all.
The collective again.
The collective. When I watched them, I didn't see that. They fight an awful lot. They do away with each other as soon as they don't need each other. So maybe that is a collective idea too, I don't know. But I found it very dark. I found the idea of the queen being there, down there, trapped in the hive, not able to get out of there, very much like Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale.
Because she's imprisoned in her function as a layer of eggs?
And if another queen is being hatched, if for some reason the workers start another queen by feeding royal jelly forever, she'll fight to the death. Whoever is the strongest of these queens wins and becomes a new queen. And I found it really a dark place, not only the hive itself, when you think that they live and work in the dark. I just found it was like a murder mystery.
Like a gothic tale?
Like reading Joan of Arc and things like that.
Like history, human history?
Human history, yes. It seemed controlled, one for all, this communal living. How lovely. And they make enough honey to survive the winter, and they do all these things. I don't know how it works, but the queen decides when the drones are necessary, and at the end of the season, all the drones are killed or pushed out of the hive. All the old people are shoved out because they have to survive, and only a few people can survive. And then it reminded me of Star Wars or...
A dystopia, sort of. The bees seem to have a very instrumental approach to other beings.
Over the marigolds on prefabricated balconies that have hung suspended 20 years longer than intended, two women confer about husbands and horticulture, why prices are so high and the place overrun with foreigners, what their children and their children's children earn, what made the president quit, why the country will break apart. The sweetness of their blame drifts down like jasmine into the rusted playground, as a neighbor crossing from the bus stop with 3 kilos of mandarins. Now we can buy them out of season, like they do in the West, sees in the stained cracks where the balconies abut the building, those spreading from the handle of her mother's porcelain teapot. I must visit her, she decides, the day's moisture running down her thighs, free hand fumbling for the keys.
sister will do when your mother's dead. Some people say your sister will do when your mother's dead. Some people say your sister will do as soon as she marries, turn her back on you. Motherless children have a hard time when the mother's dead. Some people say your Annie will do when your mother's dead. Some people say your Annie will do when your mother's dead. Some people say your Annie will do. Make a start, then prove untrue. Motherless children have a hard time when the mother's dead. Your husband may do the best he can when your mother's dead. Your husband may do the best he can when your mother's dead. Your husband may do the best he can, but your husband don't understand. Motherless children have a hard time when the mother's dead. Father to you when your mother's dead. Jesus will be your father to you when your mother's dead. Jesus will be your father to you through pain and sorrows, lead you through. Motherless children have a hard time when the mother's dead. Motherless children have a hard time when the mother's dead. I said, motherless children have a hard time when the mother's dead. Wandering round from door to door, they don't have no place to go. Motherless children have a hard time when the mother's dead. Motherless children have a hard time when the mother's dead.
What is this spirit of the hive? Where does it reside? It is not like the special instinct that teaches the bird to construct its well-planned nest and then seek other skies when the day for migration returns. Nor is it a kind of mechanical habit of the race or blind craving for life that will fling the bees upon any wild hazard of the moment. An unforeseen event shall derange the accustomed order of phenomena. On the contrary, be the event never so masterful, the spirit of the hive still will follow it, step by step, like an alert and quick-witted slave who is able to derive advantage even from his master's most dangerous orders. It disposes pitilessly of the wealth and happiness, the liberty and the life of all this winged people, and yet with discretion, as though governed by itself by some great duty. It regulates day by day the number of births, and contrives that these shall strictly accord with the number of flowers that brighten the countryside. It decrees with the queen's disposition, or warns her that she must depart. It compels her to bring her own rivals into the world, and rears them royally, protecting them from their mother's political hatred. So, too, in accordance with the generosity of the flowers, the age of the spring and the probable dangers of the nuptial flight, will it permit or forbid the firstborn of the virgin princesses to slay in the cradles her younger sisters who are singing the song of the queens? At other times, when the season wanes and flowery hours grow shorter, it will command the workers themselves to slaughter the whole imperial brood. That the era of revolutions may close and work become the sole object of all. The spirit of the hive is prudent and thrifty, but by no means parsimonious. And thus, aware, it would seem, that nature's laws are somewhat wild and extravagant in all that pertains to love, it tolerates, during summer days of abundance, the embarrassing presence of the hive of 300 or 400 males, from whose ranks the queen, about to be born, shall select her lover. 300 or 400 foolish, clumsy, useless, noisy creatures, pretentious, gluttonous, dirty, coarse, totally and scandalously idle, insatiable, and enormous. But after the queen's impregnation, when flowers begin to close sooner and open later, the spirit of one morning will coldly decree the simultaneous and general massacre of every male. It regulates the workers' labors with due regard to their age. It allots their task to the nurses who tend the nymphs and the larvae, the ladies of honor who wait on the queen and never allow her out of their sight, the house bees who air, refresh, or heat the hive by fanning their wings and hasten the evaporation of the honey that may be too highly charged with water, the architects, masons, wax workers and sculptors who form the chain and construct the combs, the foragers who sally forth to the flowers in search of nectar that turns into honey, of the pollen that feeds the nymphs and the larvae, of the propolis that wields and strengthens the buildings of the city, or the water and salt required by the youth of the nation. Its orders have gone to the chemists. They ensure the preservation of the honey by letting a drop of formic acid fall in the center of their sting. To the capsule makers who seal down the cells when the treasure is ripe. To the sweepers who maintain public places and streets most irreproachably clean. To the bearers whose duty it is to remove the corpses. And to the Amazons of the guard who keep watch on the threshold by day and by night. Question comers and goers. Recognize the novices who return from their very first flight. Scare away vagabonds, marauders, and loiterers, expelling intruders, attacking redoubtable foes in a body, and, if need be, barricade the entrance.
Will you welcome, please, the Oreos?
She seeks boom, boom. You may be her lover, but you never will recover, cause she ain't had a bite for weeks. Boom, boom. You think you're the same, cause you got the same name, but the widow has a mobile home. Boom, boom. Remember what I told you, she got 8 arms to hold you, and she's never gonna let you roam. Boom, boom. She tuck you into bed, huh? Truck on your head, huh? Then she'll wrap you as a midnight snack, huh? So if you see a spider, don't you saddle up your saddle. Why'd you think the widow's wearing black? Yeah! The queen bee baby, pray that you may be left on your own. Now that you'll give you, gonna outlive you. But the queen bee's never gonna be alone. You've been messing with a hornet, she's a blue-blooded wasp, you know. And just as you do it, she'll inject you with a fluid that you ain't even got the none. Your meat on the plate, not even first rate. She's gonna feed you to a seventh son, just like the green bee baby. Pray that you may be left on. You give it, gonna have.
give them that loving sting.
That was Barbra Streisand doing Queen Bee. The reason why that entered into Colony Collapse Disorder Radio Archive stems from a conversation with four Iraqi artists who were speaking to us from Babel, from the ancient city of Babylon, and talking about their art making practices now under current conditions. It was a really incredible experience that came as part of my privilege as a student here in the arts department of RPI, that we had Wafa Bilal as a visiting artist, and he helped us create this dialogue with artists in Iraq. So you heard Barbra Streisand. Oh, so part of that conversation, one of the artists mentioned his great love for Barbra Streisand. So I looked for a bee-related Barbra Streisand song to dedicate to the Iraqi artist. And so you heard that. And before that, Jason Martin reading Maeterlinck,
The Life of the Bee.
And we got a phone call that pleased me greatly from a listener. And we're about to transition into an extended hour of programming, which includes a conversation with Dory Midnight, who should be calling us soon to talk about, to help us transition into swarming themes and playing a lot of music. We're going to get started with some selections from our Swarm archive, which will continue on next semester in the Swarm show.
Attention. Please listen very carefully. A swarm of bees is coming this way.